Social impact everywhere.
Welcome back, my fellow social impactors, to another episode of the Social Impactors Podcast. And today we have another special guest for you. We have Brian Smith, who is the co-founder and CEO of Ryza Capital. And their mandate is to grow the ecosystem of investments that can support social ventures and apply the principles of business for positive social and environmental impact. So Brian, I first wanted to start this podcast off, which I usually do, with saying thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and we're going to jump right into this because, you know, you have a background with a company called Persephone Brewing, which you helped build, and an incredible mandate, and you've lived this life of social impact. So I'm curious to know a little bit about, you know, who you are, what you do, and why you believe you're a social impactor.
Yeah, I think I'd like to believe that. My background, you know, I came from, if you will, sort of a working class family, and yet recognized fairly early on that I came from a, you know, a world of privilege and opportunity, and so got a good education with a bachelor's and master's degree, and found myself fairly unhappy with the state of much of our economy, much of our communities and our society, maybe writ large, especially the fact that lots of people, if you will, get left behind in spite of the neoliberal philosophy of the rising tide. I started working in communities like the downtown east side of Vancouver and with people with disabilities and seeing lots of exclusion, lots of marginalization, lots of poverty and other, you know, societal ills that were not being solved by neoclassical economic, you know, approach to building a world. So I think that bred a little bit of anger and angst and impatience with trying to affect some positive social change in our world. And so for the last, you know, sort of 20, 25 years, I've been working in what I would call community economic development or social enterprise, social innovation, and social finance.
Well, thank you for, you know, talking a little bit about your story. And what I relate to is that I think I'm going through what you went through 20 to 25 years ago right now. I'm going through, you know, a lot of anger, you know, a lot of angst, a lot of anxiety related to the field of entrepreneurship, because what I see is I see businesses that kind of serve to continue the system that we have and continue the infrastructure where it is, you know, if you're born into privilege, you have opportunity. Whereas I see people in my community who aren't born in that privilege and they don't have access to these same opportunities and resources based on the system we've created. And I want to see this wave of social enterprise continue to build and kind of not tear down these systems. I'm not libertarian at all, but kind of rebuild these systems in a way that works to give everyone the same opportunity, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, appreciate your reference or, you know, to a systems-based approach to creating change. I, too, adopt kind of a systems way of thinking. And I'm a big fan of sort of panarchy cycles and that there isn't, you know, a single problem or a single source of, you know, issue that we need to solve, but rather we need to shift how systems work so that everyone benefits from them and so that we're, you know, building healthy people and healthy communities and a healthy world, Earth, you know, ecologically speaking too.
Yeah, and I mean, the only way to do that is continue this, you know, movement of you know, investing in businesses that have a social purpose or a social enterprise, and also doing these you know, investment firms or these investment companies like you're doing with Ryza Capital. That's how we change the systems.
Yeah, I think that is, I think, you know, I'll say not to be contrarian, but I think it's not the only way to do it, but in my opinion, it's the best way to do it. You know, I think what we're seeing is for-profit businesses getting more and more responsible and recognizing how important it is that they don't simply, you know, exploit resources, people in the environment for the sake of profits. And then that's going to, you know, sort of tear down everything that matters. And at the same time, we're seeing, you know, the nonprofit and charitable sector become more and more entrepreneurial and try and figure out better business models to be more efficient with resources and have more positive impact. And so, you know, the convergence of those legal, structural, you know, organizational models indicates an opportunity. And I think, you know, I like to talk about sort of hybrid models, co-ops and social enterprise and social ventures and impact ventures, you know, as the future of what I think all businesses may become. And like all models, there needs to be capitalization. There needs to be a way to finance the development of those organizations and those businesses, and a way to support their growth through continued capitalization. So that's why we developed Riza Capital, was to provide that financing and capital necessary to grow the social ventures that are going to improve our world.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And I want to segue into the next question too, because it's about almost exactly what you're doing with Riza Capital, and also your personal experiences. And the question I have is, how are you then making a positive impact in your communities?
Yeah, sometimes it feels like it's a few steps removed. But I think, you know, I appreciate your reference to Persephone Brewing Company, what I would characterize as a social venture. And if I could just share, you know, kind of a little bit about that, I think it's a good example of the types of social ventures that can have a positive impact on the ground. So Persephone is a farm-based brewery, and our intention around growing beer, if you will, on agricultural land was to explore both a full cycle business model, you know, picture, if you will, the spent grain and hops that go into making beer are agricultural products. After you're finished making beer, there's spent grain and hops, and those go into a, you know, a compost pile and break down and build soil amendment, which goes back out onto the fields that grows those, you know, agricultural ingredients that then become, so that cycle, you know, is really possible to model on a, when it's a farm-based business like ours. But as well, we're, you know, our model, our Persephone is in part owned by a nonprofit organization, a charity by the name of Sunshine Coast Association for Community Living, which works with people with developmental disabilities. And so lots of people with disabilities work on our farm, in our brewery, in our tasting room. And I think what we're doing there is we're shifting the perception of what people with disabilities have to offer to our community. So now it's people with disabilities that are feeding our community and, you know, and providing the beer and the community space. And so kind of shifting that culture around people with disabilities. And then I think what we're, the third layer that, you know, impact in our community is that, we're modeling how small farms can be financially viable. As you probably know, certainly out here in the West, the land economics are preventing the viability of small farmers and small farms. And yet, I think it's well known that small farms are the future of food systems, of healthy food systems, especially if one looks at the impacts, the climactic impacts on of, you know, massive farming and monocrops and those kinds of things. So, but how do you make small farms work? Well, in our view, it's that you need value-added processing on the farm in order to improve margins and therefore make the finances work. And so that's what we're trying to show, is that we can build farms off of the back of the craft beer industry. And so not only do we grow beer and hops on our farm, we have a couple acres, several acres of apples. We have a couple of acres of food crops. We have a CSA box program. We have an on-site food truck that uses almost completely their produce from our farm to, you know, make pizzas in the wood-fired pizza oven and support community in that way. So we're really sort of, I think, modeling what a local and healthy food system can be. So, you know, if you take a look at that whole Persephone model, I think it's an, you know, an example of the kinds of social ventures that we need to be investing in, helping to capitalize, because their impact includes a financial return on investment, a social return on investment, an economic return on investment, and an environmental return on investment. And that is where RISA is trying to bring some financing to.
I mean, the one piece of advice that you said that really stuck with me there was that you talk about modeling systems, right? And I think it's one of the most underrated things to really show that, you know, you're doing something incredible with a cyclical system and sustainably building a company while also building an ecosystem. And I think that when you model something well, that ripple effect isn't easy to see right away, but it does exactly what you're meant to do, right? You are modeling a system that others can then translate and do in their own ways. And I think that's, again, really underrated as a resource.
Yeah, thank you. Your astute, attention on our goal to model is easier said than done.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
And so that's why we talk about being a model is one thing, replicating it is another thing. But I do hope that, there is that others can take a sort of a look at it and think about, well, how do we make shoes and where should they be made? And what's the full cycle, with respect to those? Or, transportation, or infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. So my hope is that, while on one hand, like I see farm-based breweries, I do hope that they will sort of pick up and more of them will start showing up, and they are slowly. And the fact is, we know that there are in British Columbia more than 300 wineries on agricultural land. So we know that this model, the business model and the agricultural model can work. To layer in the impact aspect is, I think just kind of a no-brainer. It just seems sort of obvious. And as we get more responsible about how we manage our land, I think we can do that. However, what I'm really interested in, where RISA is trying to go and look for investment opportunities, is really scalable models. The fact is, we're on a small, 11 and a half acre farm, Persephone is. And so it's a very it's a difficult one to scale, to take to scale, especially when there's now, 200, 300 breweries in Canada. So what are the scalable models of social ventures that can both have an impact on the ground, per your earlier question, but also address, large intractable issues like climate change, et cetera, et cetera. So those are where, RISA is really keen to invest. And just to give you kind of an example on that, so I got super excited over the last year or so about the regenerative organic agriculture movement and the certification process that Patagonia and the Land Institute and others are getting behind and saying, regenerative agriculture may be one of the most effective ways to tackle climate change, i.e. compost on the ground sequesters carbon as well, if not better than anything else in the, in our ecological systems. So what if all the farmers out there just started building more compost, laying more compost, sequestering more carbon? We might be able to get caught up to this climate issue. But how much can I really, how much can we really sequester on an 11 acre farm? Like, yeah, we'll do our part. And my goal is to have 4 feet of compost in the next 10 years. So we'll definitely do our part. But again, it's 11 acres and the globe is a big, big problem. So we need scalable solutions. And this is where RISA is really looking for opportunities to invest, is the ones that can really have massive impact.
I like that. And the next question I have for you is kind of a perfect segue, but you kind of already answered it. So I want to delve a little bit more into it. But the question I have is this idea of social impact. Do you believe it's an important part of business? And the reason I want to ask it again is because you had said that it's obvious, right? But why? Why is it obvious that it's an important part of business?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's just important. I think it's critical. For a few different reasons. We A, the biggest reason, and sir, what I think, you know, and forgive my, you know, the expression of obvious, but what I think is obvious is that there are problems that we need to solve, and that we haven't figured out how to solve problems very well through the charitable or public or private sector thus far. So we need business models that can solve problems, and not just, you know, a new iPhone, but social and environmental problems in particular. And the charitable sector, you know, and I worked in the nonprofit sector for quite a while and tried to figure out, like, can we use the nonprofit approach and to solving problems? And my experience is that not very well. No, I mean, you know, we often in the nonprofit sector, we spend, you know, 60 cents or more of every dollar that we raise getting the money or reporting on the money. And so, whereas, you know, in the private sector, it's more like 10 cents on every dollar is put to, if you will, sort of administration. So, you know, the efficiencies and the other principles that have proven business models work and are and therefore are scalable are what we need in order to solve these big intractable issues in our world. So I think it's incumbent, because of the size of the problems, that we look at business as a solution to these problems. But I also feel like it's becoming more and more a part of our social contract that the investor, both the investors and the consumers in businesses, are people. And people, and in the world, living in a world where they want a healthy environment. And so we are stakeholders in terms of affecting change and needing change in our world. So business models, I think, need to be responsible to all of their stakeholders, not just their shareholders. And if they're going to be responsible to everyone, then it means changing how we do business, including solving some of these big problems. So, you know, I'll use an example here. I was in Edmonton this past week at a conference called the Enlightened Economy, and met up with a friend and a colleague and a mentor, Peter Van Stolk, who is currently leading SPUD. You know, you'll probably know SPUD is a food delivery program primarily focused on organic food delivered to your door, but it is now going through a growth and significant scaling project, including it is going to begin to deliver all of everything that you can order through Walmart in Canada.
Wow.
And so on one hand, one might go, well, wait, are you selling out here to the big corporate interests, and now you're just helping Walmart and Walmart shareholders make more profits? And yet Peter's argument is, you know, if we don't find mechanisms and change our systems to tackle issues at scale, then we're only ever going to be on the margins, and we're never going to move the dial on big issues. So now that SPUD is that delivery partner of Walmart, it is able to have an influence on Walmart. Walmart is going to, you know, look at more organics in its food produce. It's going to use and explore sustainable transportation options. It's going to, you know, really start to consider its corporate social responsibility in a different kind of way. And the next level, arguably, is creating community social value. And with, you know, sort of SPUD providing the infrastructure, the distribution channel to do that, I guess I have hope, you know, that we might actually get to scale in that kind of a model.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to work with existing models. It's never, in my opinion, it's kind of common sense again that to disrupt systems, you have to work with within, right? You have to work with people. You have to work with existing organizations and companies that are playing in the system, because they have the ability to change it as well, right? We can have small movements. We can have, you know, these incredible changes in looking at, you know, social purpose and social mandate. But until we get the large businesses that have the largest effect, whether negative or positive, things will not change as fast as we need it to, right? We need things to change now. So I think that's incredible. I think what they're doing is working within the system to change it for the better.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think there is, certainly where Rise is looking to support and provide investment capital is both in taking good businesses and good solutions to scale, but also looking for those new innovators and social, you know, if you will, impactors who are going to come up with the new mechanisms for change. So if I may, I'll give you an example of one of the portfolio companies that we're excited to support is a company called Mesh Food Exchange. And what Mesh does effectively, it's an online platform, but what they do is they work with grocery stores that are about to throw a bunch of day-old bread and day-old vegetables and fruit and a bunch of other food. They're about to throw that into the garbage, which, you know, if you follow that path down, it goes to the landfill and creates, you know, the carbon that is contributing to climate change. But just before they are about to throw that out, Mesh comes in, helps them sort it into appropriate kind of, you know, bins, if you will, and then redistributes that to charities and other places that it could be put to work. So, for example, they recently signed a contract with the Save On Foods network of grocery stores across BC. So that's 174 grocery stores that are now separating their waste food, if you will, into bins. And the quality food goes to the nearest food bank. And if it's not good enough food in a good enough state for people to eat, then it goes to animal feed. And if it's not good enough for animal feed, then it goes to farmers to compost. And so, you know, what we have, you know, with Mesh Food Exchange, A, it's highly scalable because it's an online platform and it could be serving, you know, grocery stores around the world and moving that food in different directions. So you're reducing food, you're battling climate change by reducing food waste. But you're also getting food to people who need it and to, you know, animals and farmers who can save on that and reduce their costs and so on. And or you're building, you know, arability through the development of compost and soil amendments. So, you know, we love this model of, you know, if you will, sort of social impact, because to your point, they are working within the system. They're working with the big grocery store chain and other, you know, sort of supply chain. And the farmers that already exist out there and the nonprofits that already exist, and they're just becoming, you know, connecting those dots. And yet, you know, again, to the point about getting to scale, it has great potential for social, economic, environmental impact.
No, that's just absolutely amazing. I mean, this is just my personal opinion, but I'm all about setting standards. And I think that sets a huge standard for how we need to do business. Right? We have to look at the holistic viewpoint of how things work, because if we don't, we have what we have right now. And in business, we have the environment that's lacking. We have social that's lacking. Everything has to be a part of the system. And I mean, it is doable. And it's also, like you said, hugely scalable. And that conversation of, you know, social purpose businesses aren't as scalable is wrong. Even the statistics show it, that when you're a social purpose business, you're risk adverse because you're looking at a holistic system. You're more attractive to investors and customers now. They work.
Yeah, indeed. You're absolutely right. And that's where, more and more we're starting to see that proven out. And more of these businesses, I mean, the Spuds and et cetera, Patagonia's, Ben and Jerry's, all these, you know, these substantial size businesses are all showing very solid returns to their investors and positive impact. So I think in addition to, and I appreciate your resonance with the need for us to be shifting business models to, you know, much more sustainable approaches to business, but we also need investors to be shifting their attention. You know, first of all, there's a lot too many people with too much money and most of those people do not know or have not paid close enough attention to where their money is invested. You know, I've worked in this field for quite some time. I took another look at an ethical fund, a mutual fund that I had my wife and I had some money in just before Christmas time, and it was called Ethical Fund. So I thought, yeah, we're doing good. And then I asked our wealth broker, you know, what are the businesses invested in there and that lets this be, you know, that defines this as an ethical fund? And he listed, he only gave me the top 10 businesses, but heck, even that top 10 included Shell, It included McDonald's. It included a number of businesses where my jaw dropped.
Yeah, of course.
Realized, yeah, our investing system isn't yet good enough to capitalize the businesses that we really want to be growing and getting to scale. It's still based on a system of most of, we're only looking at financial returns on investment. Mm. So as soon as we can start to show and prove that sustainable businesses, that B Corps, that, you know, social ventures can provide a financial return on investment, then I hope that investors will start to shift their money intentionally over to those businesses. In the same way that, like, the whole buy local campaign and that idea that consumer values shifted, that's now sort of 15 or 20 years old. People started looking at labels. People started, you know, buying organic or fair trade or local intentionally. So those consumer values shifted. And next, I think the investor values are shifting. We're starting to move into the early majority of investors asking, hey, can I just use my money to invest locally? Can I use it to have impact? Can I do more with my investment capital? And therein lies the opportunity for the social ventures that you and I agree are critical to get the capitalization they need to get to scale and really have that big impact we want.
And I'm excited. I'm excited to be, you know, a part of the movement that changes that. And I do agree with you. Angel investing, or just investors in general, need to change their mindset on it. And it's going to get there. And this last question is a great proof, because, you know, you're doing investing, and I think that you can be able to, you know, kind of give insight into why it's important. And the question I have for you is, what is your advice then for others to begin making their own social impact in their communities?
Yeah, I mean, I think it, I'll just sort of, you know, forgive the redundancy, but essentially reiterate what, you know, I was just getting at a second ago. And that is, I think the two big ways that we can do something, if you're not actively involved in either developing a social enterprise, social venture, or helping to get one off the ground, buy from it or invest in it, are the two, I think, really key ways that everybody can be involved. And you know, as an example, I think it's important to sort of recognize there are going to be more and more retail investment products. We developed a term deposit at our credit union that allowed people to invest as little as $1,000 in impact. And every one of us has to buy food from grocery stores, clothing, even our housing choices and our transportation choices. We can do that with a conscious consumerism that can be very meaningful and provide the cash flow and growth capital for us to really support the businesses we believe in. So, you know, as an example, Patagonia, every time we buy a jacket from them, that contributes to their business model, but they turn around. I mean, they deliberately change their mission to say something to the effect of the purpose of Patagonia is to save the earth. So they turn around and either invest in solutions to climate change, or including like land conservation and new product development, et cetera, or they give money to important, sort of charitable causes, likewise focused on climate change. So, you know, we can quote unquote vote with our dollars every day. Do you buy local? Do you buy from a social enterprise? Are you looking to contribute your consumer value and investor value into this social impact space?
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. You can vote with your dollars, and I love the system of either invest in, you know, in companies or invest in movements that change that system for the better, or really showcase that in your business model. I think those are two really strong ways to lead that movement on social impact.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So Brian, I just wanted to end the podcast today by really saying thank you. And I thank every guest, but I want to thank you specifically because I think of you as a role model for myself. You know, you're building a movement on on conscious capitalism and this entire, you know, changing of systems and holistic viewpoints. And I think that is exactly what a social impactor is. I think you're building the framework for what it is to live a life that's socially impactful or impactful in a positive way. So I want to end with saying, you know, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you, Avery. I mean, and for what it's worth, appreciate the work you're doing too, because, you know, communications and telling the stories about the kinds of work that we're doing will only help catalyze, you know, the impact. So also appreciate the role that you're playing and that you'd had me on today.